Welcome to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. We'll be coming to you each week between the NBA draft lottery and the NBA draft itself with everything you need to know. I cannot believe it's been a year, but I'm so excited to welcome our very first guest for the 2024 NBA draft season. And today we're joined by CBS's Kyle Boone. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much. I am honored and blessed, hashtag blessed, to be the first podcast this cycle. This is a true honor. I feel like I had to slip you a five under the table here, but happy to join you to talk some NBA draft stuff.
Before we get into the draft, I just have to tell everyone how me and Kyle first started working together. We both do draft work. We do Twitter space for the NBA and the NBA app, calling French games, calling high school games. And through that last year, Kyle DM'd me and he said, "Hey, can you send me your address?" I was like, "Sure." Then I get a handwritten letter. Nobody ever sends handwritten letters anymore. And so I said, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much. But now that I have your address, I'm going to put you guys on my Christmas card list." It's always a Christmas card of me and my dog, Gary. And I said, "Please warn your wife that there's going to be a Christmas card coming from me." And did you tell her, Kyle? Did you tell her
that? No, I didn't tell her. I didn't tell her. No, but it arrived and she was like, "Who is this?" I'm like, "That's Kristen Peek. You don't know who Kristen Peek is?" And she's like, "No, I don't." I'm like, "Oh, actually, that makes sense because you don't care about basketball at all." But yeah, like it wasn't a problem. It was just like, "Oh, here's a picture of a girl and her dog. Let's put it on the fridge." So that's pretty much how it went.
I appreciate her reaction because, believe it or not, that has happened with other people that we know in this NBA space. And it did not go over very well getting a random card of me and my dog. All right, let's get into it. Kyle, you and I are here in Chicago for the NBA Draft Combine, NBA Draft Lottery, and we're going to run through everything. And I think what is so interesting about this draft season in particular, everybody's saying it's a bad draft. You know, there's no Victor Wembanyama. We're already looking ahead to Cooper Flagg and Ace Bailey next year. But I think for the draft sickos, like, this is going to be the podcast for them because we are going to get into it. So if you are a Portland Trailblazers fan and you have four picks this year, or you are an Atlanta Hawks fan and you have the number one pick from the draft lottery for the first time in franchise history, we are going to tell you everything you need to know about the players that you may or may not pick. But first, let's start off with Combine Day 1. My favorite player to talk about from that day. I didn't even mean for this to happen, Kyle, but I saw Zach Edey was in the first group and he went through, you know, all the agility stuff, the shuttle run, obviously the vert test. And then we get over to the three-quarter sprint, which is basically like a poor man's 40. And I said, "Oh, I gotta take a video of this just to put it out there. We got a 7'4", 7'5" guy running a sprint." So I put it out there and I didn't say anything. And the internet went crazy. They said he was the guy from Happy Gilmore. Do you see any similarities in that when you saw the video at all?
Oh, 100%. First of all, I just like everyone to know that we are going to run through the draft combine week just like Zach Edey. Not like, you know, Devin Carter with his smooth lane agility. We're going to do it just like Zach Edey. So please bear with us. But yeah, the I will get you shooter Zach Edey type run was fantastic. And apparently he, you know, you talked to him afterwards and he was kind of leaning into it and very playful about it. So I thought it was great. I love Zach Edey as a basketball player, as a person. And yeah, like he had a pretty good week. But any Zach Edey content, you know, whether it's him dunking the basketball by just reaching up and kind of tapping it in, or running just in the way that he does, like the three-quarter court sprint, is bound to go viral. So good on UKP for getting some content out there.
I didn't even mean to do that. But now that I've seen that Happy Gilmore 2 is happening, we have to get him in that movie. Twitter, do your please. Thing. Like, please, social media, we have to get a Zach Edey cameo in that movie. But all jokes aside on Zach Edey, I was really impressed with his three-point shooting. You know, he attempted 1 3 at Purdue his entire career. He banked it in. And so to see him, you know, be able to be effective as a shooter in those three-point shooting drills. And by the way, kudos to him and Donovan Clinton for participating in those. Not every big man participated in the long range 3-point shooting. So I was really happy to see that. And Zach, the next day during his media availability, he said, you know, every team needs an anchor in the defense. I'm willing to be that person. And I'm going to be playing a different role than I did at Purdue. I was asked to be more of a back to the basket guy at Purdue. I have the bandwidth to extend my game. Do you believe him? Do you think his game can translate? And what do you think his draft range is?
Yeah, I think I'm probably somewhere in between like a Zach Edey enthusiast and a skeptic. He's a polarizing prospect, right? Like some people have him in the lottery. Some people think that he can't play in the NBA. I think it's somewhere in between. Like I think if he goes in the first round, it wouldn't be terribly surprising. His measurements were interesting this year. He actually measured a half inch taller than last year. So like the biggest player in college basketball somehow got bigger. 7'11" wingspan, very impressive. And his lane agility, I thought he helped himself there as well. Better than the likes of Alex Saar and Yves Misi and Donovan Klingon, like some guys who you would expect he'd be a lot slower than, ended up testing very well too. So I think having seen him at the combine last year, there was some optimism that Edey would be able to eventually develop his outside shot and be not necessarily like a floor spacing five, but someone who can take outside shots if necessary. Didn't really prove that at Purdue, but I think in a different system in the NBA, he could do that. So yeah, I think his stock is on the rise after this week, and the way that he shot it, the way that he moved, you know, even if it gets memed to high heavens, I think it's impressive and he's on the rise. If he ends up going in the first round, like I think that's kind of the expectation, at least for me right now.
First round where? Like you say first round, are you saying 15 or more 25?
I'd say, yeah, closer to 25 than 15. Like anywhere in the 20 to 35 range makes a lot of sense. I know that's probably a big range, but do you have him as a first round pick right now? Or do you think he will be a first round pick?
I do think that there is a team that will take a swing on him in that 20 to 35 range. Right now I have him 31 as a homecoming with the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, that'll change as the weeks continue. But I feel like in this draft specifically, Kyle, there's about 40 players that you could put between 20 and 35 and make a strong case for it. And me or any scout or anybody that's been covering this class for the entire year would be like, yeah, I see that. I can see that.
100%.
All right, moving on. UConn guards, first day of the combine, they came through with a mission statement and shot lights out all across the board. Even Stephon Castle, whose shot has been criticized all year, shot the ball very well, came in third in the 3-point star shooting drill. His teammate Alex Caraban came in first. He made 14 in a row in that drill. Bronny James came second. He made 12 in a row in that drill. And Cam Spencer kind of disappeared in the scrimmages, but he had a pretty good showing, you know, on that first day. What does that say to you about Dan Hurley and his development with UConn and the guards and preparing them for the draft?
Yeah, it says that the best team in college basketball had a lot of dudes on their team. I mean, Alex Caraban was really impressive. He was, you know, first in the 3-point star shooting drill, first in the shooting off the dribble drill, first in side mid side shooting drill. Cam Spencer was third in the star drill, second in shooting off the dribble. Cam Spencer, by the way, I think yelled the loudest F word I've ever heard in human history this week. Just if you had betting odds on who would yell the loudest F word, I think it would have been like minus 10,000 for Cam Spencer. Fantastic. Tristan Newton was good too. Finished tied for seventh in the star 3-point shooting drill. Also had a top five number on the shuttle run. So like all of those guys, I think probably did well for themselves. Caraban, I think, is going to be an interesting one where, you know, does he go back to UConn? Does he get drafted like late first round or get kind of guaranteed money? Like he had a really solid week. And I think probably was one of the bigger winners from this week. So, but yeah, the UConn contingent, unsurprisingly, showed out in a big way and tested very well, shot it really well, and I think competed at a high level.
You know, it's funny. I asked Cam Spencer's teammates. I said, because he's a very, very serious player, very serious. Like he showed up to Final Four, dribbling the basketball during his media availability, and was like, "I don't even want to be here talking to you guys. I just want to get on the court. I want to, you know, get get some shots up. Like, he's very serious. So I asked a couple of his teammates here. I said, what is Cam like off the court? Like, what does he do for fun? And they just said, nothing. I don't know a single thing that dude does except play basketball, watch basketball, study basketball. Like, he'll hang out with his family. And I said, well, who did he room with on the road? And they said, Alex Caravan. So I asked Alex, and he said, no, he's so serious. I said, well, have you guys had any fun at all in Chicago? And we know all the food you can eat in Chicago, all the restaurants. And Alex goes, yeah, we've been to the Cheesecake Factory a few times. That's been a highlight. I was like, Cheesecake Factory? He goes, oh, no, but we're going to Nobu tonight. I'm like, okay, that's better. That's better.
There you go.
But
there,
yeah, Alex Caravan.
I talked to Cam Spencer at the Final Four, actually. I think someone had asked him what he does outside of basketball, and it was like stone face. Like, no, there's no such thing as like life outside of basketball. So I love it. I love it.
But to your point, I think Alex Caravan was one of the players that definitely helped himself the most. And when people were asking what's going to go into your decision, he said, I'm obviously going to go throughout the entire draft process. And he said, Coach Hurley is begging me not to wait till the last day like Andre Jackson Jr. did last year. But he's got a tough decision to make because he really, really played well, you know, in those two scrimmages. Okay, measurements. This is the first year that every single player had to go through measurements and the agility testing and the shooting, unless you were injured. Terrence Shannon Jr. and Rob Dillingham and obviously Kevin McCullough Jr., did not do the agility and shooting testings. They have two of them have minor injuries. Kevin McCullough Jr. just had knee surgery. But were there any shockers to you on the measurements? Because there were a couple for me. You know, I'm seeing these guys during the season and I'm like, he's definitely not 6'7". And then you see the measurements, you're like, okay, that makes sense. Obviously, people had a lot to say about Bronny James and maybe Rob Dillingham. But what surprised you in terms of the measurements that came out?
Yeah, I think those were probably the two biggest surprises. Bronny, maybe not so much a surprise. Like, I think when I talked to you, it's like, you probably knew that that was going to happen all along. But
yes,
there's like some sort of like social media hype train that, you know, every 3 weeks, Bronny gains an extra inch. And it's like, you build up this like image in your head that Bronny is like this towering 6'7" forward. And that's just not the case. He measured, you know, 6'1.5" without shoes, maybe a little bit smaller than expected, but, you know, I think that's probably about right. Dillingham, kind of a surprise as well. 6'1" without shoes, only weighed 164.2 pounds.
That was was the part that I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. 164 pounds. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a little bit surprising. And then a +2 wingspan. His wingspan was only 6'3". So, those were probably the ones that stuck out to me the most. I thought Jonathan Mogbo's measurements were pretty interesting as well. He was, I'm looking here, 6'6¼ without shoes, and his wingspan 7'2". So some interesting kind of measurables there. Some guy who kind of popped off of off the measurements this week, and I think did some things during the combine scrimmages that people are like, oh, who is this guy? Someone from San Francisco. Just another one, maybe a little bit more off the radar that maybe people don't know. But yeah, like someone who I think helped themselves and the measurements were like very, very interesting.
Yeah. And by the way, we just need to touch on this real quickly. Did you know that Reed Shepherd had the 42-inch max vert that he does? I mean, I knew he was athletic. I didn't realize he could jump like that.
Absolutely not. I had no idea. You know, good grief. What were the odds on Reed Shepherd out jumping Bronny James at the max vertical jump? Like that, that came out of nowhere. That's fantastic for him. He finished tied for first in the max vert jump at 42 inches. There are a couple of guys who got there as well, Devin Carter among them, who I thought tested really well. But yeah, Reed Shepherd, like, you know, he didn't compete in the scrimmages, obviously, and has really no reason to, but a great week for him. And man, the athletic testing stuff is like excellent. Excellent.
Yes. Yes. All right. We already mentioned Alex Caravan being a stock riser. You know, we went through testing and also on the court stuff in day one. Day two and day three were scrimmages. What I really appreciated about the scrimmages is we saw players that performed well on the first day. And in years past, you've had agents pull them saying, you've done enough, you don't need to play. We're not seeing that this year at all. I think with the draft being completely wide open, which made it you know, interesting for 2 days. It was very competitive in both days. But who were some of your stock risers from the scrimmages?
Yeah. So I'll run you through kind of a long list that I had. We don't have to talk about all these guys. But stock risers from scrimmages, Baylor Shireman, mm-hmm. Justin Edwards, pleasantly surprising. KJ Simpson had a really good first day. Adem Bona, I think, looked good and helped himself this week. JT Toppin, very interesting. I'm not sure what his situation is or whether he's coming back to college or staying in the NBA draft, but I think he had a really strong week. Enrique Freeman, and then Jamal Shedd. The way that he scored, his defense was really impactful. A couple other stock risers that I'll mention, and please stop me if I'm talking too much here. Stock risers elsewhere, Reed Shepard tied for first in max vertical jump. Zach Edey, taller than expected, which, again, insane. Devin Carter was the last one that I had written down here. Yes. Broke the NBA draft combine all-time record with a three-quarter sprint of 2.87 seconds. Matched Reed Shepard with a 42-inch max standing vertical jump. 35-inch standing vertical jump, tied for the combine lead. He was impressive. And I think if you're ranking NBA combine participants with who had the most swagger on the court that I saw in Chicago this week, it was absolutely Devin Carter. Like, he broke the NBA combine record this week. Just like his demeanor when he carries himself on the floor, it's like, you know, he's on the floor. He's a defensive playmaker. He gets in your face, and he is unabashedly himself. So I think he helped himself a lot this week as well.
It's so interesting to me that those little things, right? The way you carry yourself throughout drills, throughout the testing, NBA scouts are paying attention to that. And if you're locked in and you are making a statement, that can 100% carry over to the court. And what he did at Providence this year was good. It'll be interesting to see where his draft stock goes, because there could be one team that loves him, you know, late lottery, or mm-hmm. he could go as late, I think, to 20, 25. I don't think he's going to fall outside the first round. I think he's definitely a lock for a first round pick. But he's definitely someone that I think burst onto the scene, and this is like the perfect draft for him. There's two other players I want to talk about during the scrimmage. Justin Edwards, you touched on him, you know, and I told him last night, I saw him in the lobby, and I said, I really appreciate you playing. There in years past, we saw, you know, with Peyton Watson, Dalen Terry, when they came through and they're just like, I'm not going to play. I don't need to play. I don't need to prove anything. And Justin Edwards came here and he said, I'm going to play. I'm going to compete. I didn't have a great year at Kentucky, you know, so I'm going to show that I belong here, and either as like a fringe first rounder. Where do you think his draft stock is now?
Yeah, probably that. A fringe first rounder. You know, I think he, in general, probably helped himself this week, just maybe a little bit, just competing and just showing that, you know, he's not going to duck the smoke. He came into the year like he was number one on the CBS Sports Big Board, which is like, I'm ashamed to say, because now the season did not go well for him. Like, I think we can be fair and honest about that. Coming into the season, there was really high expectations that he could develop into being Kentucky's alpha. That was not the case. You know, I was hoping to see him do some stuff this week. I thought that he did enough that, you know, if he ends up staying in the draft, and I assume that he probably will, late first round would make some sense. I probably will end up ranking him like somewhere in the 30s. So probably closer to like early second round. Just him competing this week, him just showing out and being willing to play in the scrimmages. Like, as you said, in years past, like every single year, there's guys who either drop out after the first day or don't play entirely. He fits the profile of someone who would absolutely do that in years past. So much appreciated to him and all the other prospects this year, like just showing out and being able to compete. I thought that was great.
The other two players that I want to touch on real quick were two Americans elected to go play over in Australia in the NBL, Trenton Flowers, AJ Johnson, who, by the way, had a poster dunk. It was like the play of the combine. That was incredible. And for being two young players that, you know, really had a lot of pressure to come in here and show out, how much do you think this week helped them?
A lot. I think there were two guys who, like, you know, just independently, not even taking notes on like, oh, these two guys maybe have a lot to prove. When you're watching them in the scrimmages, you're like, wow, these guys like look like they belong. And that says a lot. Like, there were a lot of guys, KP, that we watched this week who we cannot say that about, who Correct. Did not belong on the floor. And Trent Flowers, like the athleticism, you know, that's going to be there, but he showed some stuff like being able to attack off the dribble and closeouts, and his activity on defense, I thought was really encouraging. AJ Johnson, as you mentioned, like the highlight dunk of the week, played with a lot of confidence on offense. And I think both of those guys like really helped themselves this week and looked really impressive on both ends of the floor.
One note about AJ Johnson that I want to make sure all of our listeners and anybody who follows the NBA or NBA draft, AJ Johnson and Jalen Green are not related. Yes, they're both from Fresno. Yes, they look similar. Yes, they've had the same trainer since AJ was in eighth grade. He's been in the gym working out with Jalen ever since he was 14, 15. There's similarities to their game. They are not related. I just needed to put that out there. All right. We are going to take a quick break and come back with more NBA draft coverage. Welcome back to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. We're here with Kyle Boone. And Kyle, we have to talk about the player that had the most attention this week. I know people were probably sick of me writing every single day about him and you know, just blowing up the coverage. But it is for good reason. And that's Bronny James, the oldest son of LeBron James, who him and his wife, Savannah, were actually here out in Chicago for the second day of scrimmages supporting their son. And they were like any other proud parent. Savannah had her cell phone out when he was getting interviewed at the end of the game, you know, with big smiles on their face. But how big was this week for Bronny? And what did you see from him just in his maturity and being able to rise in such a big moment?
I thought he had a really big week. And I did not have high expectations for Bronny James coming into this week. And maybe that has something to do with it. But again, you go back to the guys that maybe didn't look like they belong on the floor this week during scrimmages. There was a pretty long list of them. Bronny was not among them. He had some struggles and maybe kind of looked like he just kind of blended in the first day. But the second game on the second day of scrimmages, I thought he really did good. He was more assertive. That was in front of LeBron and Savannah. More assertive. He had a pull-up J that was really nice. I was sitting in the row in front of LeBron, and he made like a nice little one-handed pocket pass, and you could hear LeBron say, "Good pass."
Yes,
you
know, and everyone heard that. The whole gym heard that.
Yeah, like it made my bones creak because LeBron has like such a distinct like "good pass." But it was fantastic. Like I wish I could bottle up that moment. But he really played well this week, and I think he handled himself well, more importantly. There's obviously questions about his game and how it's going to fit into the NBA because he wasn't, you know, a huge star at USC. And I think he answered some questions on that front this week, talking about, you know, like, I want to be like Drew Holiday. I want to be someone who can embrace my role. I don't expect that I'm going to be a superstar in the NBA, but I do expect to compete. And I feel like his media appearance earlier this week was, in particular, really impressive, kind of handling himself in a way that, you know, I don't know if he's media trained or, you know, if this is just how he feels, but it felt genuine when he's like, you know, I haven't really thought about playing in the NBA with my dad. Like, I'm just trying to make a name for myself. I don't want to be known as LeBron's oldest son. I want to be known as Bronny James. And I thought he showed a lot of maturity just like in how he handled that situation, because you were there in the ballroom, KP. It was a lot. Like, there was a huge media gaggle. People are like quite literally tripping over themselves to ask questions to Bronny James. And, you know, given the scrutiny that he's obviously going to face because of his situation, because he's LeBron's son, I thought he handled himself really well in the media setting, did really well in the shooting stuff. Testing wise, I thought was really good. Maybe the height, as we talked about earlier, maybe wasn't exactly what you had hoped. But, you know, I think this week kind of helped him in a way where people are taking him seriously as a person, which I think was probably the case anyway. But I think being able to kind of step out of that shadow and say, like, I am Bronny James, I think was really interesting. And then as a prospect too, like, I think he is seriously draftable. And I've thought that for a long time, but having the performance that he had this week in Chicago, I think maybe crystallized that in a way where people can say, like, yeah, he had a solid week in Chicago. If someone wants to take him with a draft pick, whether it's, you know, number 15 overall or number 55 overall, I think that's absolutely validated and warranted.
Here's what I want to say, and I will say this probably multiple times between now and the draft. I understand that he did not have a good year at USC. Nobody had a good year at USC. Isaiah Collier didn't have a good year at USC. We just need to forget that that even happened. I think people are forgetting that Bronny James had open heart surgery in August and was back on the court in December. To make that turnaround is insanely incredible. Like, it's unheard of. It is by far unheard of. Okay. So he's back on the court. He is a shell of himself the entire season. He's trying to adjust to a new offense, trying to adjust to the pace of the college game. So to say he should have gone back, his game doesn't translate, is totally unwarranted because he understands the NBA game. He knows about the spacing. He can play defense. He was locking up Jamal Shedd a couple possessions, who, you know, is one of the best guards in college basketball this year. Bronny James is an NBA player, and he's going to get drafted, probably, you know, on his own merit. But is it also enticing that his dad might join him? Yes. That's the first thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say is I think that coming out of this week, the Los Angeles Lakers are going to have to be having some conversations, and they're going to have to move up the board. We've already seen it with the Utah Jazz saying that they're interested in bringing in Bronny for a workout, and they are considering him with the 32nd pick. So if the Lakers wanted to move up, they'd have to move up at least to 31, you know, and I think we're going to start seeing those conversations, but it's way too early. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. But yes, Bronny James has done enough this week to be drafted, and I think he stays in this draft, and he does get drafted, you know, on the second night of the NBA draft. All right, I want to now move into something we called Make the Pick. The difference between this year's NBA draft and last year's, or even next year's, as the number one pick does not feel like a foregone conclusion. So, Kyle, you get to be the first contestant on a weekly game that we'll use to wrap up each show that I'm called Make the Pick. Now let's imagine the Atlanta Hawks call you up and ask you for your opinion, not about fit, just about talent and future performance. Who would you advise them to pick with the number one overall selection, and why?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Alex Starr. He's 7 foot tall, and gosh, I wish I had just like take Bronny James number one on just some crazy hot take, Zach Edey, but I would take Alex Starr at number one overall. He's produced at a really high level overseas playing professionally. He's a great shot blocker. I buy the shot long-term, great size, you know, positional versatility, like you name it, checks all the boxes. I think is going to be like a very safe producer at the NBA level, and is one of the, you know, only a handful, really, guys at the top of this board who I think have legitimate star potential. If I have the number one pick, I'm taking the biggest possible swing I can. I don't care if I swing and, you know, swing out and strike out within three swings. Like, I just want to make a chance that someone can be a superstar for me. And Alex Starr, I think, in my view right now, represents like the best case for that if I'm the Atlanta Hawks.
I mean, I too have Alex Starr number one. I think a lot of us do now. It'll be interesting to see if the Hawks actually decide to keep the pick, or they're going to have those conversations. What I love most about Alex is I went to Australia to see him, and you know, I went to a game he was playing in Melbourne, and I said, "Oh, are you going to shut it down?" And he said to me, "Why would I come all the way to Australia, and not only Australia, but to Perth, and shut it down and not play the entire season?" So I think he's going to be fine in the NBA playing 82 games, you know, with that sort of mentality. Like, no, I want to come out and compete. The same way we saw Victor Wembanyama play the entire season last year leading up to the draft. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I guess my dark horse for number one is Stephon Castle. Just because...
Yes, I was going to say that, yes.
Just in terms of what he did in the NCAA tournament, if that is his floor and he can grow into that dominant defender, if he gets a shot to fall, I think he can be, you know, a first option guy on a team. So he is my dark horse for number one, but we will save that for another pod. We've got a few weeks left before the draft. That's it. Kyle, we did it. We did our first On the Clock pod. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to follow Kyle and all his work, you can follow him on Twitter at Kyle the Boone. Follow me on Twitter too at Kristen Peak. Thanks to Brett for working hard to make this podcast sound and look great. Vinny Goodwill will be back with a new episode of The Good Word with Goodwill on Monday. And I'll see you back with another episode of On the Clock next Friday. See you then.